The Wheel-Turning Monarch, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying in the land of the Magadhans at Mathula. There the Buddha addressed the mendicants. "Mendicants?" "Venerable sir," they replied. The Buddha said this: "Mendicants, be your own island, your own refuge with no other refuge. Let the teaching be your island and your refuge with no other refuge." And how does a mendicant do this? They meditate observing an aspect of the body, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. They meditate observing an aspect of feelings, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. They meditate observing an aspect of mind, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. They meditate observing an aspect of principles, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. That's how a mendicant is their own island, their own refuge, with no other refuge. That's how they let the teaching be their island and their refuge, with no other refuge. You should roam inside your own territory, the domain of your fathers. If you roam inside your own territory, the domain of your fathers, Mara won't catch you or get hold of you. It is due to undertaking skilful qualities that this merit grows. Once upon a time, mendicants, there was a king named Dalhanemi, who was a wheel-turning monarch, a just and principled king. His dominion extended to all four sides, he achieved stability in the country, and he possessed the seven treasures. He had the following seven treasures: the wheel, the elephant, the horse, the jewel, the woman, the treasurer, and the counsellor as the seventh treasure. He had over 1,000 sons who were valiant and heroic, crushing the armies of his enemies. After conquering this land girt by sea, he reigned by principle, without rod or sword. Then, after many years, many hundreds of years, many thousands of years had passed, King Dalhanemi addressed one of his men. "My good man, when you see that the heavenly wheel treasure has receded back from its place, please tell me." "Yes, your majesty," replied that man. After many thousand years had passed, that man saw that the heavenly wheel treasure had receded back from its place. So he went to King Dalhanemi and said, "Please, sire, you should know that your heavenly wheel treasure has receded back from its place." So the king summoned the crown prince and said, "Dear prince, my heavenly wheel treasure has receded back from its place. I've heard that when this happens to a wheel-turning monarch, he does not have long to live. I have enjoyed human pleasures. Now it is time for me to seek heavenly pleasures. Come, dear prince, rule this land surrounded by ocean. I shall shave off my hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness." And so, after carefully instructing the crown prince in kingship, King Dalhanemi shaved off his hair and beard, dressed in ochre robes, and went forth from the lay life to homelessness. 7 days later, the heavenly wheel treasure vanished. Then a certain man approached the newly anointed aristocrat king and said, "Please, sire, you should know that the heavenly wheel treasure has vanished." At that, the king was unhappy and experienced unhappiness. He went to the royal sage and said, "Please, sire, you should know that the heavenly wheel treasure has vanished." When he said this, the royal sage said to him, "Don't be unhappy at the vanishing of the wheel treasure. My dear, the wheel treasure is not inherited from your father. Come now, my dear, implement the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. If you do so, it's possible that, on a 15th-day Sabbath, having bathed your head and gone upstairs in the stilt longhouse to observe the Sabbath, the heavenly wheel treasure will appear to you with 1,000 spokes, with rim and hub, complete in every detail. But, sire, what are the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch? Well then, my dear, relying only on principle, honouring, respecting and venerating principle, having principle as your flag, banner and authority, provide just protection and security for your court, troops, aristocrats, vassals, Brahmins and householders, people of town and country, ascetics and Brahmins, beasts and birds. Do not let injustice prevail in the realm. Pay money to the penniless in the realm. And there are ascetics and Brahmins in the realm who avoid intoxication and negligence, are settled in patience and gentleness, and who tame, calm, and extinguish themselves. From time to time you should go up to them and ask, "Sirs, what is skilful? What is unskilful? What is blameworthy? What is blameless? What should be cultivated? What should not be cultivated? Doing what leads to my lasting harm and suffering? Doing what leads to my lasting welfare and happiness?" Having heard them, you should reject what is unskilful and undertake and follow what is skilful. These are the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. "Yes, Your Majesty," replied the new king to the royal sage. And he implemented the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. While he was implementing them, on a 15th-day Sabbath, he had bathed his head and gone upstairs in the Stilt Longhouse to observe the Sabbath. And the heavenly wheeled treasure appeared to him, with 1,000 spokes, with rim and hub, complete in every detail. Seeing this, the king thought, "I have heard that when the heavenly wheeled treasure appears to a king in this way, he becomes a wheel-turning monarch. Am I then a wheel-turning monarch?" Then the anointed king, rising from his seat and arranging his robe over one shoulder, took a ceremonial vase in his left hand and besprinkled the wheel treasure with his right hand, saying, "Roll forth, O wheel treasure! Triumph, O wheel treasure!" Then the wheel treasure rolled towards the east, and the king followed it together with his army of 4 divisions. In whatever place the wheel treasure stood still, there the king came to stay together with his army. And any opposing rulers of the eastern quarter came to the wheel-turning monarch and said, "Come, great king, welcome, great king. We are yours, great king, instruct us." The wheel-turning monarch said, "Do not kill living creatures. Do not steal. Do not commit sexual misconduct. Do not lie. Do not drink alcohol. Maintain the current level of taxation." And so the opposing rulers of the eastern quarter became his vassals. Then the wheel treasure, having plunged into the eastern ocean and emerged again, rolled towards the south. Having plunged into the southern ocean and emerged again, it rolled towards the west. Having plunged into the western ocean and emerged again, it rolled towards the north, followed by the king together with his army of 4 divisions. In whatever place the wheel treasure stood still, there the king came to stay together with his army. And any opposing rulers of the northern quarter came to the wheel-turning monarch and said, "Come, great king, welcome, great king. We are yours, great king, instruct us." The wheel-turning monarch said, "Do not kill living creatures. Do not steal. Do not commit sexual misconduct. Do not lie. Do not drink alcohol. Maintain the current level of taxation." And so the rulers of the northern quarter became his vassals. And then the wheel treasure, having triumphed over this land surrounded by ocean, returned to the royal capital. There it stood still by the gate to the royal compound at the high court, as if fixed to an axle, illuminating the royal compound. And for a second time, and a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth, and a seventh time, a wheel-turning monarch was established in exactly the same way. And after many years, the 7th wheel-turning monarch went forth, handing the realm over to the crown prince. 7 days later, the heavenly wheel treasure vanished. Then a certain man approached the newly anointed aristocrat king and said, "Please, sire, you should know that the heavenly wheel treasure has vanished. At that, the king was unhappy and experienced unhappiness. But he didn't go to the royal sage and ask about the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. He just governed the country according to his own ideas. So governed, the nations did not prosper like before, as they had when former kings implemented the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. Then the ministers and councillors, the treasury officials, military officers, guardsmen and advisers gathered and said to the king, "Sire, when governed according to your own ideas, the nations do not prosper like before, as they did when former kings implemented the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. In your realm are found ministers and councillors, treasury officials, military officers, guardsmen and advisers, both ourselves and others, who remember the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. Please, Your Majesty, ask us about the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. We will answer you." So the anointed king asked the assembled ministers and councillors, treasury officials, military officers, guardsmen and advisers about the noble duties of a wheel-turning monarch. And they answered him. But after listening to them, he didn't provide just protection and security. Nor did he pay money to the penniless in the realm, and so poverty grew widespread. When poverty was widespread, a certain person stole from others with the intention to commit theft. They arrested him and presented him to the king, saying, "Your Majesty, this person stole from others with the intention to commit theft." The king said to that person, "Is it really true, mister, that you stole from others with the intention to commit theft?"
"It's true, sire."
"What was the reason?"
"Sire, I can't survive."
So the king paid some money to that person, saying, "With this money, mister, keep yourself alive and provide for your mother and father, partners and children. Work for a living and establish an uplifting teacher's offerings for ascetics and Brahmins that's conducive to heaven, ripens in happiness and leads to heaven." "Yes, Your Majesty," replied that man. But then another man stole something from others. They arrested him and presented him to the king, saying, "Your Majesty, this person stole from others." The king said to that person, "Is it really true, mister, that you stole from others?"
"It's true, sire."
"What was the reason?"
"Sire, I can't survive."
So the king paid some money to that person, saying, "With this money, mister, keep yourself alive and provide for your mother and father, partners and children. Work for a living and establish an uplifting teacher's offering for ascetics and Brahmins that's conducive to heaven, ripens in happiness, and leads to heaven." "Yes, Your Majesty," replied that man. People heard about this. "It seems the king is paying money to anyone who steals from others." It occurred to them, "Why don't we steal from others?" So then another man stole something from others. They arrested him and presented him to the king, saying, "Your Majesty, this person stole from others." The king said to that person, "Is it really true, mister, that you stole from others?"
"It's true, sire."
"What was the reason?"
"Sire, I can't survive."
Then the king thought, "If I pay money to anyone who steals from others, it will only increase the stealing. I'd better make an end of this person, finish him off, and chop off his head." Then he ordered his men, "Well then, my men, tie this man's arms tightly behind his back with a strong rope, shave his head, and march him from street to street and square to square, to the beating of a harsh drum. Then take him out the south gate and make an end of him, finish him off and chop off his head." "Yes, Your Majesty," they replied, and did as he commanded. People heard about this. "It seems the king is chopping the head off anyone who steals from others." It occurred to them, "We'd better have sharp swords made. Then when we steal from others, we'll make an end of them, finish them off and chop off their heads." They had sharp swords made. Then they started to make raids on villages, towns and cities, and to infest the highways. And they chopped the heads off anyone they stole from. And so, mendicants, from not paying money to the penniless, poverty became widespread. When poverty was widespread, theft became widespread. When theft was widespread, swords became widespread. When swords were widespread, killing living creatures became widespread. And for the sentient beings among whom killing was widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people lived for 80,000 years, but their children lived for 40,000 years. Among the people who lived for 40,000 years, a certain person stole something from others. They arrested him and presented him to the king, saying, "Your Majesty, this person stole from others." The king said to that person, "Is it really true, mister, that you stole from others?" "No, sire," he said, deliberately lying. And so, mendicants, from not paying money to the penniless, poverty, theft, swords, and killing became widespread. When killing was widespread, lying became widespread. And for the sentient beings among whom lying was widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 40,000 years had children who lived for 20,000 years. Among the people who lived for 20,000 years, a certain person stole something from others. Someone else reported this to the king. "Your Majesty, such and such a person stole from others," he said, going behind his back. And so, mendicants, from not paying money to the penniless, poverty, theft, swords, killing, and lying became widespread. When lying was widespread, backbiting became widespread. And for the sentient beings among whom backbiting was widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 20,000 years had children who lived for 10,000 years. Among the people who lived for 10,000 years, some were more beautiful than others. And the ugly beings, coveting the beautiful ones, committed adultery with others' wives. And so, mendicants, from not paying money to the penniless, poverty, theft, swords, killing, lying, and backbiting became widespread. When backbiting was widespread, sexual misconduct became widespread. And for the sentient beings among whom sexual misconduct was widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 10,000 years had children who lived for 5,000 years. Among the people who lived for 5,000 years, two things became widespread: harsh speech and talking nonsense. For the sentient beings among whom these two things were widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 5,000 years had some children who lived for 2,500 years, while others lived for 2,000 years. Among the people who lived for 2,500 years, desire and ill will became widespread. For the sentient beings among whom desire and ill will were widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 2,500 years had children who lived for 1,000 years. Among the people who lived for 1,000 years, wrong view became widespread. For the sentient beings among whom wrong view was widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 1,000 years had children who lived for 500 years. Among the people who lived for 500 years, three things became widespread: illicit desire, immoral greed, and wrong thoughts. For the sentient beings among whom these three things were widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 500 years had some children who lived for 250 years, while others lived for 200 years. Among the people who lived for 250 years, three things became widespread: lack of due respect for mother and father, ascetics and Brahmins, and failure to honour the elders in the family. And so, mendicants, from not paying money to the penniless, all these things became widespread: poverty, theft, swords, killing, lying, backbiting, sexual misconduct, harsh speech and talking nonsense, desire and ill will, wrong view, illicit desire, immoral greed and wrong thoughts, and lack of due respect for mother and father, ascetics and Brahmins, and failure to honour the elders in the family. For the sentient beings among whom these things were widespread, their lifespan and beauty declined. Those people who lived for 250 years had children who lived for 100 years. There will come a time, mendicants, when these people will have children who live for 10 years. Among the people who live for 10 years, girls will be marriageable at 5. The following flavours will disappear: ghee, butter, oil, honey, molasses and salt. The best kind of food will be finger millet, just as fine rice with meat is the best kind of food today. The 10 ways of doing skilful deeds will totally disappear, and the 10 ways of doing unskilful deeds will explode in popularity. Those people will not even have the word skilful, still less anyone who does what is skilful. And anyone who disrespects mother and father, ascetics and Brahmins, and fails to honour the elders in the family, will be venerated and praised, just as the opposite is venerated and praised today. There'll be no recognition of the status of mother, aunts or wives and partners of teachers and respected people. The world will become promiscuous, like goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, and dogs and jackals. They'll be full of hostility towards each other, with acute ill will, malevolence, and thoughts of murder. Even a mother will feel like this for her child, and the child for its mother, father for child for father, brother for sister, and sister for brother. They'll be just like a deer hunter when he sees a deer, full of hostility, ill will, malevolence, and thoughts of killing. Among the people who live for 10 years, there will be an interregnum of swords lasting 7 days. During that time they will see each other as beasts. Sharp swords will appear in their hands, with which they'll take each other's life, crying, "It's a beast, it's a beast." But then some of those beings will think, "Let us neither be perpetrators nor victims. Why don't we hide in thick grass, thick jungle, thick trees, inaccessible riverlands, or rugged mountains, and survive on forest roots and fruits?" So that's what they do. When those 7 days have passed, having emerged from their hiding places and embraced each other, they will come together in one voice and cry, "How fantastic, dear being, you live! How fantastic, dear being, you live!" Then those beings will think, "It's because we undertook unskillful things that we suffered such an extensive loss of our relatives. We'd better do what's skillful." What skillful thing should we do? Why don't we refrain from killing living creatures? Having undertaken this skillful thing, we'll live by it. So that's what they do. Because of undertaking this skillful thing, their lifespan and beauty will grow. Those people who live for 10 years will have children who live for 20 years. Then those beings will think, "Because of undertaking this skillful thing, our lifespan and beauty are growing. Why don't we do even more skillful things? What skillful things should we do? Why don't we refrain from stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, backbiting, harsh speech, and talking nonsense? Why don't we give up covetousness, ill will, wrong view? 3 things, illicit desire, immoral greed, and wrong thoughts. Why don't we pay due respect to mother and father, ascetics and Brahmins, honouring the elders in our families? Having undertaken this skillful thing, we'll live by it." So that's what they do. Because of undertaking this skillful thing, their lifespan and beauty will grow. Those people who live for 20 years will have children who live for 40 years. Those people who live for 40 years will have children who live for 80 years, then 160 years, 320 years, 640 years, 2,000 years, 4,000 years, 8,000 years, 20,000 years, 40,000 years, and finally 80,000 years. Among the people who live for 80,000 years, girls will be marriageable at 500. Among the people who live for 80,000 years, there will be just 3 afflictions, greed, starvation, and old age. India will be successful and prosperous. The villages, towns, and capital cities will be no more than a chicken's flight apart. And the land will be as crowded as hell, just full of people, like a thicket of rushes or reeds. The royal capital will be our Benares, but renamed Ketumati. And it will be successful, prosperous, populous, full of people with plenty of food. There will be 84,000 cities in India, with the royal capital of Ketumati foremost. And in the royal capital of Ketumati, a king named Sankha will arise, a wheel-turning monarch, a just and principled king. His dominion will extend to all four sides. He will achieve stability in the country and possess the seven treasures. He will have the following seven treasures: the wheel, the elephant, the horse, the jewel, the woman, the treasurer, and the counsellor as the seventh treasure. He will have over 1,000 sons who are valiant and heroic, crushing the armies of his enemies. After conquering this land girt by sea, he will reign by principle, without rod or sword. And the Blessed One named Maitreya will arise in the world, perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed, just as I have arisen today. He will realize with his own insight this world, with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, gods and humans, and make it known to others just as I do today. He will teach the Dhamma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, meaningful and well phrased. And he will reveal a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure, just as I do today. He will look after a Sangha of many thousand mendicants, just as I look after a Sangha of many hundreds today. Then King Sankha will have the sacrificial post that had been built by King Mahapanada raised up. After staying there, he will give it away to ascetics and Brahmins, paupers, vagrants, travellers, and beggars. Then, having shaved off his hair and beard and dressed in ochre robes, he will go forth from the lay life to homelessness in the Buddha Maitreya's presence. Soon after going forth, living withdrawn, diligent, keen, and resolute, he will realize the supreme end of the spiritual path in this very life. He will live, having achieved, with his own insight, the goal for which people from good families rightly go forth from the lay life to homelessness. Mendicants, be your own island, your own refuge with no other refuge. Let the teaching be your island and your refuge with no other refuge. And how does a mendicant do this? It's when a mendicant meditates by observing an aspect of the body, keen, aware and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. They meditate observing an aspect of feelings, keen, aware and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. They meditate observing an aspect of mind, keen, aware and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. They meditate observing an aspect of principles, keen, aware and mindful, rid of desire and aversion for the world. That's how a mendicant is their own island, their own refuge with no other refuge. That's how they let the teaching be their island and their refuge with no other refuge. Mendicants, you should roam inside your own territory, the domain of your fathers. Doing so, you will grow in lifespan, beauty, happiness, wealth, and power. And what is long life for a mendicant? It's when a mendicant develops the basis of psychic power that has immersion due to enthusiasm and active effort. They develop the basis of psychic power that has immersion due to energy and active effort. They develop the basis of psychic power that has immersion due to mental development and active effort. They develop the basis of psychic power that has immersion due to inquiry and active effort. Having developed and cultivated these four bases of psychic power, they may, if they wish, live on for the aeon or what's left of the aeon. This is long life for a mendicant. And what is beauty for a mendicant? It's when a mendicant is ethical, restrained in the monastic code, and has appropriate behaviour and means of collecting alms. Seeing danger in the slightest flaw, they keep the rules they've undertaken. This is beauty for a mendicant. And what is happiness for a mendicant? It's when a mendicant, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskilful qualities, enters and remains in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion, while placing the mind and keeping it connected. As the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, they enter and remain in the second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. This is happiness for a mendicant. And what is wealth for a mendicant? It's when a monk meditates, spreading a heart full of love to one direction, and to the second, and to the third, and to the fourth. In the same way above, below, across, everywhere, all around, they spread a heart full of love to the whole world, abundant, expansive, limitless, free of enmity and ill will. They meditate, spreading a heart full of compassion, rejoicing, equanimity to one direction, and to the second, and to the third, and to the fourth. In the same way above, below, across, everywhere, all around, they spread a heart full of equanimity to the whole world, abundant, expansive, limitless, free of enmity and ill will. This is wealth for a mendicant. And what is power for a mendicant? It's when a mendicant realizes the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and they live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. This is power for a mendicant. Mendicants, I do not see a single power so hard to defeat as the power of Mara. It is due to undertaking skilful qualities that this merit grows. That is what the Buddha said. Satisfied, the mendicants were happy with what the Buddha said.